pronounced improper. You are live from the past.
I am a working man, I get things done. Work for the Holy Ghost, work for the Son. I am a working man, oh yes I am. I am a special agent of the land.
And you were listening to Live from the Path, coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. I'm going to kick us off with, I'm not going to make it. I told you the last show, there was like a really big Life from the Path surprise. And I promise you, it requires my effort.
I already told people.
Mike.
They texted me and asked me.
And you gave it away?
Yeah. I folded like a cheap piece of cheese.
Oh, come on. All right. Anyway. Wait, so should I just let the cat out today?
Yeah.
No, I haven't said anything.
Okay.
I'm loyal.
Yeah, stone cold. Anyway, so it requires my effort. And my ignorance, and so I'm working on it, and so just give me like maybe another week, and I think I'm gonna have this thing pulled together.
Stop texting people about it, Mike.
Yeah. They text me. I can't help it.
Gosh, darn
the throngs
Mike.
Of fans.
We all want to know,
Connor.
I can't.
Tell us your secrets.
Unbelievable.
The throngs, aka
okay. Anyway, hey, you're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us this evening. So there's it's a pretty straightforward show today. Sometimes there's big things that happen in the culture, and like we are not we're probably not the podcast to come to for like a full diagnostic. Always of the events of the day. In my mind, like there's a lot of people who are more. This is going to sound bad, fellas, who are more informed or whatever. Like we're talking about like the stuff,
more passionate about those.
Yeah, yeah. About the events themselves.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But where they hang with us is where kind of like how do you react to it? It's sure. Funny if every game and almost all conversations on Life from the Path say, here's an event. How should we think about that? Mm-hmm. Like it's basically the notion of presented with there are multiple people acting multiple ways or reacting to these circumstances. How do we look at that through? It's kind of a what would Jesus do situation. Mm-hmm. And that's basically, this is us talking it out.
We inform the interpreter.
Yes. And so Charlie Kirk was assassinated. It was on the 10th. What is today? The 15th? Yeah, so about 5 days ago. And so we're not going to go, look, the information we have about the thing is going to be stale by the time you hear it in the morning from us. And so like we're not really going to do all of that. But I do want to spend some time. I think it's interesting, like the reactions to this. And I have I had some cautions, actually, just watching how people were reacting. There were some things where I was like, we should be careful here. And they're not all that. But anyway, I'm interested just as you guys are digesting and seeing within your context of the people that you're talking with. Just kind of your reactions to that. So we're going to spend a little bit of time with that. And it's not. If you have thoughts that you wanted to share or whatever, you can always use the complaint line 515-517-0085, call or text. I would love to hear from you about it. I think there's a risk in here, both of action and inaction. And so I think I want to, we'll chat through that a little bit. Also, we've got a couple different Ask the Pastors from the complaint line. Cody was talking about why is Ezekiel eating parchment, eating scrolls. And so I'll share his question and then we can try to address that. And then Abuva was making his way through Daniel, hit Daniel 12, and we've got named angels and stuff. And
yeah. And it's not the first time it happened to Daniel, I believe. So Michael is the angel that is named.
Yep.
You get that, I believe, starting in Daniel 9. But it's an interesting word that's used. It's a prince of the people. It's like, I think the word is like Sar in Hebrew, and it's just... I'm struggling on how to understand the concept of like what that means for an apocalyptic writing, how I'm to take that in light of other portions of the Bible. Like there's a Jeremiah quote, I think 15, where there's like a Gabriel named angel. Same in Job, I think there's a named angel. I mean, not Job. Anyway, somewhere else there are named archangel type prince dudes or things. And I'm just trying to, like, understand how to not look at angels the way that, like, the last 2,000 years of culture and church understanding and Hollywood have made me understand angels.
Yep.
Versus, like, what's a good biblical understanding of what I'm talking about here, or what I'm looking at here?
Yeah.
And I guess I'm just, maybe it could be a broader question of, like, how am I to take in a thing like this?
Yeah.
Or what's a good place to start kind of question?
Yep.
Or if y'all have a quick answer to go like, hey, don't think about it this way, think about it this way, and there you go.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the rumble.
He has his own office. Michael has an office.
Yeah.
And they call him. And he flies like Superman. He doesn't need the wings. That's for sure.
These,
and here's what else you need to know about him. He wears an earpiece. So the Lord can speak to him at all times.
Yeah. Yeah.
And dispatch him and his boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't there like another angel that like is talks to David about your prayer? Not, maybe it's David. Your prayers have been like stopped for a moment, but I've been on my way to deliver this message to you or deliver.
That's Daniel.
Daniel. Sorry.
Not yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So same situation. Suppose that was nine.
So
that's the thing I was talking about.
Okay, so what's going to be interesting? I think my answer is probably going to surprise you, but we'll wait till we get
that's
there.
That's why I wanted to ask, is because I have a feeling that I could probably dig into this for 60 years.
Yeah.
And but if you guys have gotten to a point where like there's a thing that's been unlocked for you, whether it's Spirit of the Wisdom or Wisdom of the Spirit,
saying it's not the office thing?
Wisdom unlocked.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't. I feel
it's
like
our spinoff show.
I'm making that statement because never mind. We're not going to. Yeah. All I'm saying is like I feel like as I continue on in my walk with Christ, my level of understanding in certain things has been wholeheartedly unlocked in certain ways. And I think that part of that is very much like I've just done it more, but I feel like part of it is just like I'm stronger in my faith and ability to like have a relationship with my Father. And there's a level of like the Spirit teaches us of I think there's a knowledge that's been imparted on me much more than it was 4 years ago, 2 years ago, a year ago.
Yeah.
And I that's one of the ways that I guess I've kind of been programmed to talk about that, I guess, is what I meant by that. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
I was just sorry. I had a real curious moment. Is that like why do we talk about the spiritual walk? Where does that come from?
Walk in the Spirit. The
Spirit.
Yeah.
Isn't that Romans 8?
Is it?
I thought it was like what about being
Galatians
walking in the Spirit. No, what's the quote?
Okay. Oh yeah. Walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh.
I thought it was from in the garden.
Walk. You think it came from a hill?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Andy.
Walking. Enoch walked with the Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if the Lord walks fast and Enoch's like,
okay,
I have little legs.
Thank you very much.
The Lord is what?
Hey, slow it down.
Like, I'm sorry, I have very long legs.
Okay, I'll be honest with you. This is what triggered it. It's because Buva said something in my spiritual walk, and I thought, what if Jesus runs?
Paul talks about race.
Is that like a 5K?
Dude, if Jesus runs, we got to figure out a post-resurrection body. Gonna out to me. It certainly ain't me now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't say he came out of the tomb and was burning laps. Everybody like, I feel so good.
He did need some fish, though.
Yeah. 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 Need a protein.
100% Jesus' diet.
All right.
Doing a beach run.
Okay. All right.
Salty friends.
All right. Let's see here.
I'm on the road to Emmaus. get moving.
Keep on up, boys.
Yeah. He actually.
Questions about it?
He was trying to pass those dudes. He's like, left.
we're talking about being more similar.
I didn't say walk with me. Come on, pick it up.
So, trying to get to some friends.
Okay.
Left. Right.
They're not expecting me. It's a surprise.
Okay, new blog post from Life from the Path. Jesus runs. okay, all right. So the assassination of Charlie Kirk. So, yeah. Let's get off the board that there's no reason to abide any reaction as if this man was not a human being who should be mourned simply for the fact that someone murdered him.
Yeah,
there was harm done to him. There just isn't any reason for any of that. And there is a in that realm, though, there's a callousness to that in some ways is not necessarily surprising if you don't actually value life.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And so there's a caution in me. Like, this is where maybe one of the risks that I think I have spiritually. I don't know. I hope it comes off this way. Maybe it doesn't. But like, I just have a pretty extensive amount of grace for how people came to believe a thing that they think.
Sure.
Because I just find that I think people have been misled.
Yeah.
And like, there are systems and like that a lot of times people are a product of deceit that has been perpetuated upon them, that there just aren't that many people who are like willfully acting out in evil ways. They are doing so in some means of which, like, the outcome is the same, but they've gotten that way because of whatever. It depends on how you, like, your parents raised you to believe a certain set of things. Like, it's not crazy. For as an example, and I don't want to hang on this one, but like, as an example, like, a lot of people who are finding children who are not who've got some confusion on their sexual orientation are coming from parents where that is also true.
Yeah.
Like, it's wild the number of couples of or like who are raising kids, and like all of their kids have this. And so, like, I think there's just a caution in there. It's frankly, it's also in the same way. Like, you could have a religious upbringing of which you've got either you got it right or you got it wrong. And like, yeah, the people you influence now believe this thing. It's hard for them to shake, right? And so, anyway, I look out and I say, like, there's evil here. Evil, like, folks that would take human life is evil. Can I recognize that some of the evil that people come to is from like intentional deceit by powers and principalities, by people who are deceived and then they influence the people who are innocent among them to get there? Yes. And yes. I still have that. And so, like, one of those things that's a caution in me is that, like, where ideas are pernicious and evil and produce evil things, there are deceived people underneath them.
Yeah.
And the amount that they participate in their own deceit, I don't know.
Right.
And so, anyway, I say all that to say is that, like, there's a caution in there around, we were talking before the show of like, there's something in a situation that one of us has where there's someone who they're not acting like themselves. And so there's some, at least a concept of a separation of like, is this the person? Is this an influence upon a person? And how I approach that has some level of, I don't know. So anyway, sorry, I'm going to ramble here. And so you guys stop me. I already did.
I'm not really the counterpoint. But like everything you said, like the people who are like defaming the man believe all of that's true, but from his side, right? Like,
yeah,
like he is influenced in a way. He produces X amount of hatred the world. You know what I'm saying? So like all the things that you would say is true from one side, like is completely seen on the other side in the exact same eyes. So like I was trying to think of an example. I couldn't come up with one because you're like, we should mourn human life. And I think that's true. Right. And then I thought, well, like everybody was pretty much on board when we got Hussein. You know what I'm saying? No one's like, you know, treat him better. You know, but like this dude was also like on the hook for killing a bunch of people. Like he was on the hook for a bunch of violence himself, where like Charlie Kirk was obviously, he did all of his fighting with and debating with words and ideas, right? No physical violence, right? And like it kind of goes back to the sticks and stones thing, right? So you can, you know, it's not the same. Yeah. But I mean, like psychologists would tell you, or like people who look at mass groups of influence of people, right? Like if you influence the guy, like with your words, that is willing to do the violence, then you're just as a part of or guilty of.
Yeah.
So like, that's where the people who like, I'm not defending them. Like I find it abhorrent, but like they got three steps out, right? They're like his ideas and his things that we don't agree with and we think does, you know, puts X out into the world. Like it produced the thing.
Yeah. Troy, are you going to say something?
Yeah, I think along with Mike's point, I think the shake there seems to be that like the people that do not value the life that has been taken will look at that and go, he deserved this because of the ideals that he held, perpetuated violence against large communities of people. And it appears as though the anger
that they have towards this and the level of apathy apathy they have in this piece. And even to the point where I've seen plenty of people go, you know, he would have been fine with his death. He fought for this kind of thing anyway, which is just, it's a very insane argument to me. But there's a level of like, I agree with Mike that they would come to the same conclusion on the opposite end. And that's, I don't know how to land that thought. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No. I think that's true, but I think that is then the caution as we, ideas are powerful and they can lead people
absolutely
to danger.
Yes.
Be prudent. So as an example, I saw quite a few things, just generally speaking, I thought Charlie Kirk was a pretty good representation of how to go about a thing. I know there's things he said that have made some people pretty angry. I checked them because he's a human being. He's fallible. He didn't handle all the things right. I'm sure. I found him more gracious than some people who I would also agree with the things that they're saying, but not how they're saying it. And frankly, I'm not sure that I'm aligned with the intent. And it goes back to, we often talk about you can't divorce the words of Jesus from the love of Jesus. And so there's some people who I agree with that get the words right. But the heart doesn't match. And so people are missing Jesus. And I think the opposite is also true. People with an intent to love people in the way that it represents Jesus' character will then separate themselves from words that Jesus very clearly spoke and called good. And you're doing people a disservice there too. And so both of those things have to be true.
It's a half-hearted love.
Generally speaking, I would tell you that my impression is that Charlie Kirk did that better than anybody, often led with his faith. And so I actually don't even understand of all the people to be mad at with. I don't know. He's harder, but I say that to say, I heard, I saw a bunch of people who were critiquing things he said, and I went and checked it because I do. Be discerning about the stuff that you're taking in. Be discerning about how quickly you react, even with things you disagree with. Because for all the people who are upset or who were saying, he deserves some of the things. Look at these foul things he said. There was one of them where I'm he probably could have been more cautious he said that. The rest of the stuff was taken wildly out of context. It completely missed the point of what
to
he
the
was
point where
at.
If you go one sentence further on some of the quotes, it's that completely changed the context of what he just said.
Yes.
But you get a lack of information and a lack of accountability information where people go, that person that I trust quoted, they trust that person took the right information. And then that disseminates down to, we have an entire society that's just plagued
with
this right now.
Yes, that's right. And so you do run the risk this is where your prudence is I want you to divorce your prudence from your politics. I don't care who you implicitly agree with. I want you to be cautious about here digesting information.
Absolutely.
I want you to not believe the worst out of the people who you inherently disagree with,
yep,
just because they're saying it. They may be the worst representation of that. Just like sometimes people are actually who they say they
right,
are.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the thing they said they meant. My experience is that they're not good representatives of a very serious amount of gray that exists within people. And actually, I think we're seeing that in some of the reaction to Charlie Kirk's death. To a man, I've not heard a pastor say that they did not, or I haven't heard anybody say that their attendance stayed the same. You had people kind of coming out of the woodwork in reaction to this, looking for something to grab onto, looking for answers, be influenced by a guy who said, this is what I follow. And now they're interested in a way that they weren't, even from people who are more liberal in their political beliefs, because there's something about this that strikes them that they actually didn't have any anger or hate. They just disagreed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the representation on the fringes, I think there is a push, and this is my other caution, from some political beliefs that, again, I generally would agree with, that are going to very broad brush paint people with an ideology that, I think, in fairness, social media does not do a good job representing. That algorithm is going to show you something that you're going to interact with.
It does a horrible job of representing.
Yeah,
that's right.
An on-purpose horrible job of representing.
That's right.
So you're a fool to believe that, obviously, if per post, if you believe that you got the entire truth within 7.5 seconds, you're an idiot.
Yes.
Right? There's no possible way.
Well, yeah, that and any amount of time that you spent on that post, the algorithm then goes, this is the kind of thing that this person is going to spend time looking at.
Yes.
So I'm going to put more of this in front of them.
Conflict engages people,
yeah,
right? And so The whole point is to get you engaged and leave you here. And
because
so like
for money,
if it was just a regular conversation about what the price of bananas, people are like, yeah, I mean, I'm out. Whatever. Yeah. We'll pay an extra 7 cents. Inflation, taxes and tariffs. Okay. No big deal. But like when you have like these two polar opposite things that are so staunchly opposed, you're almost waiting with bated breath to figure out how a bridge will be made.
Yeah.
You know, and so your brain wants to create one, or your brain wants to go no bridge. Those people can stay over there. And then, and now you're like, let me find more people that will agree with me that we're getting rid of this bridge concept because it's out, right? And all that equals you're still here. And, yeah. so like, it, as much as it like feels so like Luddite of me to blame it on like the way that social media portrays information, like it's geared to make you stay. It's
built for engagement.
It's built for engagement. That's its job. And so like you drank the poison, my friend. Not saying that you can't do good things on there, but if you believe you're taking the whole world in right in 7.5 seconds, as you move on with your thumb, you didn't even read the thing, right? You kind of let it skim through and let it sink in and bounce around. And now you're like, I understand the whole breadth of this. And like, you're part of the problem.
Yeah. And not to hammer that piece, but like I saw vicious and like vile stuff going on social media. Mm-hmm. I had great conversations in person.
Yeah.
I had fantastic conversations with people.
Yes.
Like people wanted to talk and engage with this and have conversations and like legitimately sitting in my living room. We were able to go, okay, like we're humans.
Yeah.
And let's try and understand this. And like, let's try and look at this through a lens of like, we know Jesus and there's a truth. And truth is objective in mm-hmm. this, and let's walk towards that.
Yeah.
And it was an incredible time for that.
Yeah.
And people are missing that all over the place because the only level of engagement they get with any kind of society is social media.
Yeah. I would say actually it's a very interesting and somewhat encouraging irony that like the vast majority of people who are having the reactions, both positive and negative, have an interaction with Charlie Kirk because of something they saw on social media.
Yeah, right.
But of all the people who are engaging the culture so broadly on social media, this is the guy showing up every day and talking to people, like looking people in the eyes. And like, I actually thought that's one of the things that made him particularly winsome. And I think we're probably generous in ways that like, again, other social commentators on either side, like are fighting battles through social media itself,
yep,
or through the political process. But like this guy showed up and had to like take whatever somebody said on the microphone and deal with them as human beings.
Right. Look them in the eyes.
Right. And like there is something that will and which should make you a more gracious and kind person when you're not just dealing with this ethereal set of ideas and political beliefs and religious beliefs or whatever. But like some of the things that you think are detrimental and are outside of what God prescribed as good, like, are you talking to those people in a like who and you believe that ideas matter and words matter and how you treat people matter and how they hear it from you matters?
Yep.
I actually saw that in him more than I think I saw it from all kinds of other things that came across. And I think there is something that requires you to deal with the things that you believe in the eyeballs of someone who may be hurt by it.
Yeah.
And who's someone who like could be encouraged by it, someone who feels a conviction about it, someone who feels that you don't like them because of the things that you're saying, and having to deal with that in person. Like, if you retweeted more than three things over the weekend, fellas, like I think it's time to not do that.
Yeah.
And like, I know, here's the thing. But again, I've got some sympathy for it. This person meant something to you. He influenced me in ways that like, I don't know, like I take that stuff in all the time because I'm interested in the conversation around what people are thinking and how mm-hmm. it relates to Jesus and stuff. And so like, you don't have to know somebody so it, like because that they were their best friend to not be impacted by the fact that their presence is gone. There's something very powerful and good about some of the things that they did.
Sure.
They were a witness for Jesus. He was a witness for Jesus. He and like boldly, not arrogantly, humbly and boldly in ways that oftentimes we're not sure it's okay to do. I know we've talked about this before, but there have been just times in my life where like I you hear someone talk and you're like, I didn't know people were confident and okay to say out loud some of the stuff that I like thought, like being a Christian, like it was okay. And it made logical sense in the world around us to behave this way. It wasn't just Jesus going, be so wild and countercultural. And, you know, like maybe people will notice it. Like it makes practical sense for all kinds of things that you're sure. touching in.
Right.
And that has been something where like you find someone that can articulate the things in a way that like you can really connect with. And like, I mean, he's not that uniquely to me, and I'm not sure I had a like particular thing with things that he said, but like, if you had something like that with him, like bless it. That's awesome. And like it feels a way, and it's shocking to see someone murdered for their ideas. It's shocking to see it's a revealing in ways that like are tough to deal with. So I'm not saying any of that is wrong to react to or have a feeling about. I just like, if you want to think of a bit like the way to honor the thing that he was trying to do, it's probably not exclusively on social media. like there's a very human interaction point there. And there was something that I was kind of inspired, just like as you hear people tell stories about this guy, is that like how many people said, like talked about him reaching out and encouraging them. Mm-hmm. And like there's a crazy number of people. Like, I don't know how the man did all the things that he did and still was sending out text messages to folks. And like there were a large number of people that would say like it's within the last 2 or 3 weeks that they've heard from him. And like I just think about how much influence, like I've got a wife and 4 kids that I can intentionally interact with that I'm probably not doing. I work at a company where I have relationships and I have employees, and I'm like, what the heck, man? Like, I'm not even doing the best with like the small amount of folks I have the ability to influence. This dude's like keeping up with 300 people in a 3-week time frame. Simply just build them up. I heard what you said. Sounded great. Keep it up. Like just stuff like that. And I thought like, okay, you can practically do that. Those are practical relationship things that this person is doing in somewhat enhancing how you think about all the stuff that you may have seen or interacted with. And so like, mm-hmm. there's something you can take from it. I don't know, Dan, like, what are you like, is there anything that's kind of bubbling up in some of the conversations or situations that you've been involved with over the last few days?
Yeah, honestly, it's like a gut punch to a lot of people. You know, obviously, none of us have met him. We've seen a few videos there are people in my congregation that watch him faithfully and are big fans, like 8th graders and older, that it's hard for them to wrap their mind around the fact that someone would be so hateful to shoot him and kill him, and yes, that right. others would be so hateful to celebrate it. You know, that's just mm-hmm. a puzzling thing, especially when they're the ones who are always shouting love and tolerance, and they're dancing on his grave. You know, it's really showing the true colors of a lot of people. And yeah, it's been a hard struggle for a ton of people. I think you have two worldviews clashing together. In the mature Christian view, we understand we're just eternal souls that have a body for a while. And so he's fine. That's the hope we have as Christians. I mean, we're talking about he died. He's not dead. He's very well alive, yeah. very much fine. We're missing his physical presence here. But then you have the other side that's, you know, they dance on his grave because they don't think it matters. You know, people don't matter. Life doesn't matter. It's a very low view, whether it's a child in a womb or it's someone elderly who they think has no value anymore. That there's a culture out there that just doesn't care. And that's a hard thing to face. So,
but don't you think, I guess that's kind of what I was getting at earlier, though, is that like if you see the reactions of people,
yeah,
like the increase of people showing up to churches this weekend. And I think like the number of they said the number of applications to like be represent the Turning Point USA at the various campuses and schools was like, I think they were at 1,200 or something, and now they're at 37,000. It's like a crazy
yeah,
amount.
Huge. Yeah.
And even we were talking before the show started, some reactions from people who are not politically aligned and wouldn't agree with Charlie Kirk, but like liked him and spent time with him and that kind of thing. Like, is it? I guess I'm cautious of like it's like a binary culture thing. Like, I'm not sure the dancing on the graves actually represents a majority of people.
No. I think the majority are somewhere in the middle of all of that.
Yeah.
You know, they're just living their life, you know, and you got a fringe, both left and right,
for sure,
that are trying to drive the the narrative. And, you know, Charlie got stuck in the middle of it. He really didn't. I mean, he had definite views, but he was just, like you say, he was just talking to people. He was just like, well, let's have the conversation. And they'd come at him, anybody who wanted to, and he just asked questions a lot of times. He wasn't preaching at him. He wasn't yelling at him. He wasn't condemning them. He just, well, so you say you think that, you know, you can't define a woman. Like, well, how someone's transitioning to a woman, how do you know when they've gotten there? You know, and they'd be like, you know, just trying to answer the questions. And that's why so many people began changing and turning their ideas around, because so many of them don't have the ability to do just critical thinking. And he would bring critical right. thinking in, and they'd be like, well, crap, this everything I believe is kind of empty, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and that was a threat to some people.
As it would be, that. So see, like that part I understand, and I understand the antagonism. I understand that, like, if someone's questioning you and it starts to attack your worldview and be effective in it,
yeah, right.
Like you start to lose a sense of yourself. Well, like, what am I? What did I believe? Uh-huh, right. How did I believe this? Was I deceived? And like,
I don't know though. I mean, don't people do that to us all the time?
Oh, yes.
Atheists,
yes,
will laugh right. and joke.
There's a flashlight on the fragility that exists within people's established beliefs. That when questioned and critical thinking perspective, it gets to a point where it becomes combative against you when you're being questioned.
Yeah.
And I think
that's
what it
their
does
problem,
is it,
not
it's,
mine.
Right, exactly. I think it's a flashlight in the fragility of the person who has the held belief.
Yeah.
Because they have the belief based off of a certain level of information that they believe that they had. When someone starts to question that level of information and then go, but did you think about it this way? Or can you answer this? Or I'm asking you to extend the hell belief that you have to deal with this level of questioning that I have. And there's a certain level of frustration and anger that comes towards that, because people don't like to be called out that way. People do not want that. The vast majority of people can't handle that kind of questioning. And I think that's the interesting thing that I've seen has been what we see is, they're questioning a held belief. The other side, not other side as in like the other side of an aisle or something like that, but the flip of that coin, people look at that and go, that's an attack.
Mm-hmm.
Is attack on the person. It's like, no, I'm not actually attacking the person. I'm attacking the ideology that they so boldly are holding and championing by living in a certain way or existing in a way or being willing to come into an argument and go, this is what I believe. I disagree with you.
Yeah, I expect people to disagree with me.
Right, exactly.
I mean, maybe I can convince them. Maybe I'm not. I'll tell them my side. Then it's up to them. I'll walk away and still love them either way.
And I think the person that is willing to be in that kind of transaction of information can accept that is looked at as arrogant.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of it could be a part where this stems from is it's mm-hmm. it's a held belief that there's an arrogance to being in that kind of place where you seem to be antagonistic against people's held beliefs.
Yeah.
And a lot of these held beliefs, they feel like they are very justified in, if you don't think the way that I do, you are a hateful, violent person.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I have noticed that in some, I wouldn't even call it Christian apologetics, but like there are people who like have a firm faith in Jesus and they have zero tolerance
right.
for being able to answer questions uh-huh. that you should be able to answer.
Yes, right, exactly.
Like if you're gonna give up your life and say, look, I'll go where God tells me to go and do what God tells me to do, then God better be real.
Right,
like,
yes.
This better not be a figment of my imagination. Like, so
standing on a cross-examination kind of thing.
Right, so like these are questions people should be asking. I've never had a problem with people pecking apart my faith because, wouldn't you?
Okay. I would hope you would. It shows me that you're willing to look at what I'm saying and go, I believe that this person wholeheartedly believes this, is willing to die for this.
Yes.
And therefore, by being a human, I'm going to engage in this and ask questions, and I would hope that they would have answers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an interesting thing that you're calling out for Christian apologetics as well, there's... I don't know. It's not cultural. It's not societal. It's not generational. I don't think it's that boxed in. But there is a certain level of like argumentation automatically is negative, and therefore any level of argumentation is looked at as violent or looked at as intolerant or whatever kind of thing. Whereas like if you challenge that belief, then it becomes what is now weirdly considered violence.
Yeah, yeah.
Towards
mm-hmm. There's fragility on both sides of that.
Undoubtedly true.
Point,
yes, right.
Is, and like that was the thing. I think, you know, he was doing his best to like go, well, we still need a market for ideas
yeah,
here.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, there's a currency here that I'm willing to engage in that most people can't mm-hmm. or are not willing to, because they one, they've probably never actually been asked to do that, and two, that just life in general, for some reason at this point in time in this day and age, the amount of people that are willing to have a rock to stand on kind of beliefs, but then do not in any way try and look into why they believe that thing and therefore are an informed believer in that thing is wild to me. And it seems to be a flashlight on the fragility and the lack of informed belief that exists on both sides in that piece.
You know what's so interesting though? It's like I've been reading in Acts recently, and like this is the same reason Paul gets stoned yes. everywhere he goes.
Yep.
Is he says a thing, people plug, they plug in their ears, they don't want to hear it. Same mm-hmm. thing happened to Jesus. And then they react in violence because it shook a foundational thing that was part of their identity, right. by what they believed.
Societally, yeah.
Yeah, it got to them. Which is interesting because you also see Paul, not only does he keep walking into these things, but you remember when he's walking down, it's at the Areopagus, and he's like, mm-hmm. yeah. he gets in there and he's like pointing all the things, and the thing with the unknown God or whatever. And then some people are mad, and then some guys are like, we'll hear you again on this thing. Yeah. And like, it's just, the caution then is like, you know what Paul didn't do is go, look, if the fact that you didn't believe or buy into everything I said made me mad.
Right.
And he just kept, he kept showing
right.
up.
There's a certain
which is the loving thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But there's a certain amount of confidence or you guys mentioned arrogance. That I think we all have, but Paul had, because he had talked, he had spoken
yes.
to the resurrected
right.
Jesus. It's
yeah.
like, there. The,
it's perceived
I know
as an
him,
arrogance.
Right?
Yes. Right, yes, exactly.
And when we talk about our faith, like, we're our source is the eternal God who said, let there be, and it was. He's the designer. Mm-hmm. He wrote it all. It's not anything we made up. It's not our intelligence. It's his intelligence. And so we come with a certain amount of confidence when we talk
yeah.
about
it's issues. Not arrogant to insist that my car is black.
Right, yes.
Yeah,
right,
it is
right.
for
it's
sure
just,
black.
Yes. Yeah.
It just is.
Exactly yeah. right. And if I said arrogance but did not follow up with the perception of arrogance,
yeah, yeah.
I'd
yeah.
let
sure, sure.
challenge
I mean, I am arrogant.
I absolutely believe I'm
I true.
Meant from the perspective of that level of confidence is, my car is black. We know that is an objective truth. Mm-hmm. At this point in time, the concept of an objective truth is being attacked mm-hmm. societally. And therefore, my argument that my car is black because I can perceive it to be black, someone else goes, well, I don't understand perception of that. Colors don't mean anything.
Right.
My truth is that I actually perceive that to be blue, and therefore you're arrogant for you not willing to concede to my thought
yeah,
of
yeah.
this is blue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The funny thing
like,
is,
that's the hit here.
When they started introducing that truth is not truth, I thought that what idiot's going to believe that? And now we have a whole culture that like they honestly like, oh no, it's green.
That's the concept yeah. of yeah. information.
Actually, I feel it's green.
That particular belief has been the most effective mm-hmm. on
what's your
like,
truth.
Ignore the fringes, right? And just go with the people where I think it's a lot of gray. And
yeah.
like, Dan, to your point, I just think some people are like, they're not super engaged and they're just worrying about their own crap. And
yeah, yeah. right.
But the thing that where they get them though, is like, they don't want to have the sense that they're infringing upon someone else's reality.
Yeah, right.
That position is where you get a lot of gray, like grayish folks who are like, well, yeah, I mean, but who am I to argue with that guy? If he wants it to be like, what do I care?
Yeah.
Like, he either doesn't want to fight about it. He doesn't want to take it from someone, especially when the thing that's on the line is what feels like mental health related to the quality of the relationships, the type of relationships they have, the ability to love, the ability to do like these types of things where people are like, what it's I'm not feeling it, but it's you feel mm-hmm. it, and your truth can be yours. Like, what do I care? Like, there's a very American thing about that,
yeah,
politically.
Yeah.
But it has moved into the moral and philosophical and religious lens. And actually, I think that is where there's passivity in a lot of the grayish believing folks, because they're like, who am I? And there's
sure.
actually humility in that goes like, who am I to go around and just tell
yeah.
you like you don't believe the thing that you're saying? And so that has been super effective. There's all kinds of things that rile up people on the fringes of these beliefs, that one, that particular thing has been very effective mm-hmm. at keeping wishy-washy grayness.
Oh, undoubtedly true. Yeah. Right.
Okay. So the thing, I got like a closing thought. Does anybody else have anything else they wanted to say about that?
Nope.
About this?
I this has nothing to do with what you guys were talking about, but I'm less excited about like 30,000 people being geared up to like represent tents on campuses.
Yeah.
Like because like I could care less about the political ramifications, and I'm not sure that they love Jesus. I think they just want to fight with people, and I'm not as excited about that.
No.
Like of all the things that like Charlie Kirk did, like he led with Jesus, and so like his presence on those campuses was okay to me. I didn't see him waffling on anything that came out of the Bible. And like he led with that, and he never hid that. And so, like, I'm excited that it's possible that the truth about Jesus will be a center point of the conversation. If that's not the case, I hope those dudes stay off college campuses, because we don't need to create just another cultural fighting point of a bunch of people who are like, well, because frankly, you're not going to be as good at it. Dude was pretty good at it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, of all the things that continually amaze me is people's willingness to step up to the mic, right? And like I've said this before, is like I really like watching people who are great at what they do, and that includes like stuff that I don't like ballet, or you know what I'm saying, or like there's all kinds of stuff out there that's just not my cup of tea. I don't enjoy it, but it does bring a smile on my face to watch people be really good at something. And that guy was good at debating and having a conversation. And so, like, it doesn't, even if they brought the smartest dude up there, like, you could have probably given him, like, the political left thing to argue and gave you the right, and he would still win because he's just really good at what he does, right? And so, like, I don't think he would have done that because he has principles and whatever. But, like, at the end of the day, like, you were just outmatched, right? And, like, the arrogance that it took to, like, I get him, like, nobody got it.
I also don't understand that. That's wild. Okay, so let me leave you with the where I have some significant cautions. Is I just want you to think about this in the days coming, and this kind of piggybacks on something that Mike was just, I think, getting at, which is just because someone agrees with you politically does not mean they agree with you in the kingdom.
Yep.
And so I've heard I was listening to a couple of things even on the way here, and and it was just an interview and talking with people, memories about Charlie Kirk, and not all those people were Christians. And I can tell mm-hmm. I can tell their reaction is a very political one. It's not that they didn't care about him or something like that, but like my allegiance is to King Jesus, and like there is in some ways to the extent that the work of King Jesus blends with whatever political situation that you find yourself supporting or involved in, then I think that's great. To the extent that it doesn't, we serve King Jesus.
Yep.
And so be cautious that those two things don't get falsely wrapped together. Anybody that walks in step with Lord, we're for. Anybody that, like, if it does not, regardless of the political affiliation, you just need to be cautious, because not all ideas furthered under the name of Jesus are actually of Jesus. And so just be cautious. And of all the rhetoric things that I've heard, and I there's a motivation here that, like, in honor of this man and the work that he's done, to not let it die, to let the influence of things that he fought for, that he thought were good, to persist. I think that's great. I think that's really good. I think what a blessing that people can be motivated. A man can have such influence on people to be motivated to go do a thing. May we also use our influence in a way that otherwise motivates people to continue our humble service beyond. I think that's right. But, like, if your inclination after Charlie Kirk's assassination is to fight, then fight like Jesus fought.
Mm-hmm.
If your inclination is to get, like, real riled up and go after people because of what happened, go after the people that Jesus went after in the way that Jesus went after them. If your inclination is to use whatever is in your possession from a social media perspective, or to use your voice to amplify ideas that you saw in Charlie Kirk that you're like, I don't want that to die. I want to be part of the solution of that. May the thing that you're be amplifying, the things that Jesus said, that then Charlie Kirk said because Jesus said them. Let that be it. And so, like, whatever motivation you have, whatever action you're expecting to take, I want you to follow it up with, let us blank, whatever that is, like Jesus would have. That's honoring the Lord and Savior that Charlie Kirk had. That keeps you and protects you from getting involved in things that are more political. And it's not that the work of Jesus can't doesn't have influence and work in the realm of politics. I'm just saying where there are risks of you end up pushing a political agenda that wasn't for the kingdom, that goes away when you go, look, I'm going to take action the way Jesus acted. I'm going to serve the way Jesus serves. I'm going to, like, I want to see us rule. Like, it's funny, you see this in the book of Revelation, where, like, it starts to describe believers as kings, and we're like, ha-ha, we get to be kings, kingdom of, and we're like, you get to be a king like Jesus was king.
Yep.
How did, like, if you can do that, then yeah. But, like, that's not a crown and gold and ladies, like, flowing around you with feathers. Like, this is service. This is sacrifice. This is, like, going to the least of these and serving them and, yep, and showing that God loves them and call and saying a hard thing that they don't want to hear, but saying it with love in your heart.
Yes.
And a desire that all would become to know Yahweh. And so, like, yeah, whatever it is, excitement that you're feeling, I want you to take that operative word and I want you to do it like Jesus. And then that's awesome. Be blessed in that. You're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. 515-517-0085. Call or text. I'm glad to hear your thoughts and comments on anything that we were just talking about. Okay.
It's funny. I gave that exact advice out to somebody this week. And, like, it reminds me of there's a song by Mercy Me called Oh Death. And, like, it's whatever. They're like, you know, oh Death, I'm not afraid of you. You got yours, you know. But, like, one of the lines in the song is, it's like he says, oh, death, you scared me to death. And then the next line is, you ain't my king, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so, like, I remember this lyric all the time, right? Like, this, it pops in my head randomly where I'm like, when like, your faith starts to mix with, like, the rest of life, right? Like, and like, the kid I was talking to, it had to do with, like, being in a play, you know, or being in, like, you know, some of the fine arts stuff at school, or, like, you know, anything, like, the when they're pursuing sports.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, so we were talking about it and, like, how much, you know, what the season was going to look like and how much effort you have to put in and time it would take up. And I'm like, just remember, it ain't your king, though. Right. So, like, all this stuff gets to be part of your life and part of the things that you fill your time with. But it's not your king. And so when the king be speaking, like, you be reacting. And same thing is true, like, to sum up all the stuff Ben just said, right? Like, all that stuff politically, I don't care if you're what side of that fence you're sitting on, right? Or if you're just in the middle going, I wish people would leave me alone. At the end of the day, it's part of your life, but it ain't your king. And so, like, if you can put that in proportion, because frankly, when the king speaks, the edicts go out to all the lands and it covers all the ground.
Yeah.
So, like, where your king speaks on things, that's the truth that you live in. And everything else gets to be part of your life, good, bad, or indifferent, but it's not your king. It ain't your king, though.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. We gotta ask the pastor on the Live for the Path complaint line. The question was, why in Ezekiel 3 is he snacking on scrolls? I mean, prophets had a rough gig. This was the answer by, Cody McCormick.
Yeah.
As it hit us up. He says, Andrew McCormick says, his wife says, I mean, prophets had a rough gig. Also, quote, at least he got to cook the bread on cow dung and not human dung. Again, Andrew McCormick.
This is great.
Yeah. This is a wild story. So I'm gonna read you. He said Ezekiel 3. I'm gonna start back just a hair before that in Ezekiel 2, yep, and then we'll make a run up on. And the question is like, what is going on here? Why are we eating of scrolls in Ezekiel?
I know Ben's answer already.
It's Ezekiel 2. I kind of want to read it. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Ultimately, he's being sent to Israel, who is rebelling against Yahweh. And this is in verse 8, and he says, or 7, speak my words to them, whether they listen or refuse to listen, for they are rebellious. This is Yahweh to Ezekiel. And you, son of man, listen to what I tell you. Do not be rebellious like that rebellious house. Open your mouth and eat what I am giving you. So I looked and saw a hand reaching out to me, and there was a written scroll in it. When he unrolled it before me, it was written on the front and back. Words of lamentation, mourning, and woe were written on it. Okay, so that's what Ezekiel's being given. Verse 1, chapter 3. He said to me, son of man, eat what you find here. Eat this scroll. Then go in and speak to the house of Israel. So I opened my mouth, and he fed me the scroll. Son of man, he said to me, feed your stomach and fill your belly with this scroll I am giving you. So I ate it, and it was sweet as honey in my mouth. Then he said to me, son of man, go to the house of Israel and speak my words to them, for you are not being sent to a people of unintelligible speech or difficult language, but to the house of Israel, not to the many peoples of unintelligible speech or a difficult language whose words you cannot understand. No doubt, if I sent you to them, they would listen to you. But the house of Israel will not want to listen to you because they do not want to listen to me. For the whole house of Israel is hard-headed. Look, I've made your face as hard as their faces, and your forehead as hard as their foreheads. I don't remember that.
Yeah.
God's like, now you look like them. Look like a stubborn joker.
Yeah.
I've made your forehead like a diamond, harder than flint. Don't be afraid of them or discouraged by the look on their faces, though they are a rebellious house. Next he said to me, son of man, listen carefully to all my words that I speak to you and take them to heart. Go to your people, the exiles, and speak to them. Tell them this is what the Lord Yahweh says, whether they listen or refuse to listen. Then the Spirit then lifted me up, and I heard a loud rumbling sound behind me. Bless the glory of Yahweh in his place. With the sound of the living creature's wings brushing against each other, and the sound of wheels beside them, a loud rumbling sound. The Spirit lifted me up and took me away. I left in bitterness and an angry spirit, and Yahweh's hand was on me powerfully. I came to the exiles at Tel Aviv, who were living by the Shevar Canal, and I sat there among them, stunned. For 7 days. Hmm. Okay, well, we'll stop there. That's verse 15 of chapter 3. So why is Yahweh having this man eat scrolls?
So I think one of the first things you have to establish, especially within Ezekiel, is what's vision, what's actually happening.
Okay.
From what I understand here, this is still within the vision of Yahweh speaking to Ezekiel about what his plan is or what his job is to do when speaking to the people of Israel. From that piece, eating of a scroll, right? Like the concept of when God writes something on a scroll, it's representative of like his instruction, his words to the people. Merely reading them is one thing, but then having them indwelt within you to then go and speak to his peoples is a totally different thing. Mm-hmm. It's like a different, I don't want to go as far as to say a level of commitment, but kind of if Ezekiel reads them, that's one thing. But if he ingests them and they become part of him, mm-hmm. and then he goes out to the people, he is a prophet speaking from an indwelling of the Lord's words within him to Yahweh's people. And I think if I'm establishing the right pattern here in Ezekiel, which if I remember correctly, this is still vision. This is not a physical thing. Like there are some prophets who are required to do physical things out in the real corporeal world.
Yeah.
As a representation of a part of the relationship with Yahweh or a brokenness in the relationship of Yahweh that we get within Isaiah and Jeremiah. I think Ezekiel still is in the place where it's vision, God's plan. This is a symbol more than it is an actual act.
Okay. Okay.
Ready?
Yeah, hit me.
Sometimes God has physical things to convey spiritual truths. Stuff that so our innards match our outards. Like something Ben would say. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, technically I say innies and outies.
you do say innies and outies.
Innies and outies. Okay. Yeah, I would agree with both of those things, actually.
Jockey.
You got a high chance of me agreeing if you refer to something that I would say. Yeah, I agree. It is a vision, and it's not the only place we see this particular thing in a vision.
Yeah, right.
Like, the same thing happens to John in the book of Revelation.
It's
like
a common prophet thing.
That's right. You get to the heavenly realm, and like God writes a thing down and says, eat it.
Yep.
And then
eat it.
There's
take
often
it
like
you.
There's often like a reaction to it. Like,
right. It's honey, then it's gross, yeah, in your belly.
Yes, that's right. And so, yeah, and I think you've got the gist of it right, which is like it's one thing to say, hey, I heard a thing, and now I'm going to go take it in. It's another thing to have, basically, it becomes part of you, of what you're sharing out. And so, and I think actually that's why you often get the description of like, it's difficult, because oftentimes they're difficult words. Like, you, it tastes sweet because it's a word of the Lord, and then you got to see how it lands on the world around him, who doesn't want it, who's rebellious, and you're like, well, this is bitter.
Right.
Shoot.
That's exactly what happened to prophets.
Yes. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was always honeyed words because it was like from Yahweh, and it was a wonderful experience at that point, but then there's an earthly revelation that hits, and it's like, oh, you will be absolutely persecuted and most likely killed for what I'm going to tell you.
Yes. And so, here's what's odd. So, like, okay, I'll grant that, and visions are a little bit easier to deal with because you're like, it's a vision. Like, of course, I'm supposed to interpret this in some way or another. But then you get into these, the example that Cody gave on the Synax, where you're like, you're cooking stuff on poop.
What's a Synax?
a sign act, which is like there's something that God is trying to teach his people through the prophet, and he makes the prophet act it out.
Isaiah had to bash his way through the city wall, didn't he?
Yeah,
like there's like the Kool-Aid man.
Yeah,
yeah, like literally he was basically like enacting a siege, and like it was a way that like the people were to recognize that like God was absolutely going to allow a siege to break the walls of Jerusalem, and like they had to run away in a certain way, and so he was to pack up his stuff and then like make his way out through not a normal portcullis of getting out of the city, but like in a way that you would only do if the city was under attack.
Yeah.
And it was a real physical thing that he had to do. So if he's in the streets speaking the word as a Yahweh, he goes, guys, this is what's going to happen. This is what it's going to look like if you keep profaning the name of Yahweh, you keep pursuing this idolatry, the armies of the people are going to wash upon this place like an ocean, like a sea, chaos.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to run out in the middle of the night. You won't have all your stuff with you because the safety that you had when you were the people of Yahweh and carried his name is no longer afforded to you. You will be pushed to exile.
I feel like this, like I never thought about this, but like some of these prophet stories are easy to take in from like a mile up, but like there's a baker on the other side of the wall, and Isaiah come bawling through it, and he points at him. He's like, and that's what's gonna happen. This dude's like, what?
What do you mean?
What do you mean? What's gonna happen?
And you got like, there's another one where Ezekiel's like having to lay on his side, like naked or something
for extended periods of time.
Yeah, it's crazy long. And here's the thing: you're like, why did he have to go? There's no one else around.
Uh-huh.
Like,
yes.
Why does he have to go through this? And so to the thing Mike was getting at, like, oftentimes, just think of the rituals of the things that we do, the postures in prayer and the healing, the put your hands on someone to pray and anointing oil. Like, how do you, it's a way to try to bring into physical reality a spiritual thing that's happening. And like, how else are you going to do it? It's going to be, and you know who's going to know this message passionately? It's freaking Ezekiel.
Yeah.
And he's going to, it's like, I'm begging you, fellas. Like, I had to sit through this.
Yep.
God is using me. It hits Ezekiel very uniquely on the judgments that are going to happen and the impact of the things, because he's the guy that had to go through the wall. Everyone else is the crowd standing outside watching Noah build a boat and going, look at this idiot. And like Noah's trying to, he's begging him. It's like, there's going to be a flood, and like flood. And so you watch Noah do it, and then you realize what's going on. And then so God uses these prophets, and Ezekiel's like, do you think, like, look at that hole in the wall I just put in there.
Right, yeah.
God made me do that because this thing is going to happen to you. And I'm hurt because I barreled through a wall,
right.
And my food tastes like cow crap.
Uh-huh.
And like, I just need you to listen to me. And like, sometimes you just got to, like, you feel it.
Yeah.
You go through the motions physically because that's the only way to express yourself. And so they do sign
it. And Jesus did this too, right? He's like, yeah, I get it. You can't see sin being healed. So that guy walks now. There.
Yes.
Now you get
him.
It.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And like, then there's that baker guy who's like, you look like you're in a way. Do you want a scone or something? It's like, I just...
You know, the Jews known for their scones.
Yeah.
And there's... Ezekiel strikes me as... I mean, obviously, there's plenty of really heavy stuff that's happening within every single prophet. But like Ezekiel 9 is, if I remember correctly, Ezekiel 9 is like the he's watching the spirit of Yahweh leave the temple.
Yeah, yeah.
Like flat out leave it.
Yeah.
And to a Jew, that is terrifying. Like, right. That is terrifying. You are watching the God that is 100% a part of everything you do in your life through all of your family's history and remembrance, beyond just your family, your entire nation. And like the well-established within our history and our geography and our culture, the building that is the representation of the God that saved us from slavery and damnation is flat out leaving his house that he said, I will inhabit forever unless you do these things.
Yeah.
And then God goes, now what you just saw, go tell everyone.
Yeah.
Like, go tell them this is happening. And Ezekiel's to the point where it's like, no, you've lost your chances. Like, we've gone through all these conversations. You have desecrated my temple. You are worshiping the sun in my house, looking to the east rather than to my seat. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
And like, that's, I can't even imagine being that. I mean, I should, because that's very similar to like where we're at. But anyway, It's just something wild. And like to then go and speak those words, I think it's Isaiah specifically that has like five things that he has to do throughout the book that are like real, show a painful truth that's coming out in a physical way.
Yeah.
And that's just, I mean, it's just, I can't even imagine.
I get, you know, I'm struck recently, like I started, and some of you guys have seen this, like I started writing a devotional, and like, this is Ben who's cautious on devotionals, generally speaking.
Sure.
But like, just looking for like where can we be reminded to have hope in our faithful walk with Jesus? And like some of this, not only in scripture, of which there's some really cool examples, but even throughout church history, like you just see people behaving in such a way, you're like the patience and hope they have that the good news of Jesus will make a difference in this situation is just crazy. Like the first one that I had looked at was around, you remember when Paul's in prison, him and Timothy? Silas. And they show up into town, and like that lady's following him around going like, mm-hmm. these guys are sons of the Most High God. And Paul gets irritated with it like three yep. days later. He's like, I'm pissed at this. And so he just casts the demon that's in her out. And like, she was working for a guy, so now they're mad that like they may have lost their livelihood. Paul's constantly taking the livelihoods of people with his behavior.
Really is.
And so
freaking brass maker.
So they get a bunch of local judges and stuff, and they just beat him up. They beat Paul and Silas up and they put him in prison. And so they go into prison, and about halfway through the night, there's like a rumbling earthquake or whatever. All the doors open, and the guard that's on duty runs in. He's about to kill himself because like that was what's going to happen anyway. And at least it's more shameful if he waits to have someone kill him.
Sure,
so he's just going to kill himself because everyone escaped. Paul and Silas aren't there. They had been singing hymns to everyone in the middle of the night, just singing along, and like scripture tells us, like people were listening, they're paying attention to these hymns, right? Okay, so anyway, I'm telling this story because there's a part that I did not remember, and the part was is they go, the guy comes in and they tell him about Jesus, that whatever's going on with the hymns and the fact that they didn't run, like he's like, okay, I'm going to tell you about Jesus, and the guy goes, I want in. They go to this guy's house. And it's this, and they baptize his whole family. Him and his whole family are baptized. And these two wild apes go back into the jail. And if you remember, Peter just, like earlier in Acts, had been like the doors open, and he hightailed it.
Yeah.
He gets out of there. He's knocking on the door,
dream.
And they're like, I'm thinking of Peter. I almost hear him in the background. And really, he's at the door, like trying to, because he left jail.
Uh-huh.
Not these two fellas. They go to the guy's house. Everybody gets baptized, and they go, we're going back in. We're not going to cause
you. And you just wonder why Paul and Peter have a contentious relationship, right?
Do you think Paul brought that up? It's like, Peter, I heard the story that you left the prison. Did you hear what I did? I went back, man.
Yeah, Peter's like the soft hands of this operation. Paul's out there just tearing it up. I'm like, you don't tell me about missionary work.
It's just like the, I'm going to steal an Obama phrase, the flat out audacity of hope in these men that goes, we're in prison. We should not have got beat up for casting people out demons. Let's hum a few tunes. Hey, maybe we can get the other prisoners to love Jesus. Maybe we can get the jailer to love Jesus. Maybe we can get his family to love Jesus.
Yeah.
And you know what? This is going pretty well. Why don't you put me back in there? There might be more opportunity tomorrow. And it's just like, so that was the Bible one. There was one, it's church history. There's a guy named Gregory the Illuminator. Have you guys heard of this man?
That name sounds familiar.
So his name is Grigori. Grigori. And so like he's his dad is his name is Enoch, and like they're in Armenia, and Armenia's got a king. It's Khosrov II. There's a guy next door in like what is the remnants of the Persian Empire. It's like the Sasanarian, I think, is what it's called, empire now, which is his granddad. Okay, and so the guy's like the Armenian king Khosrov is like pro Rome, and that makes it difficult because like Armenia is like the Belgium, which like wars are constantly being fought over this place. It's where a lot of trade routes intersect, and so like there's trouble going on. And so anyway, this guy in the S Empire sends Enoch, Grigor's dad, to say go kill this man because he's family, and so Enoch can just walk in there, hey, Uncle Khosrov, whatever, dead. dead. Okay. And what they're hoping is going to happen is that, like, they don't know that Sanak is involved, like Grigor's dad is involved. And so they're like, well, maybe they'll make him king. So now he's got a guy on the throne over in Armenia who can be friendly to him. This completely backfires. Anak gets murdered, and his mom and his wife gets murdered, and most of his family gets murdered. A nurse grabs old Grigor and runs him over to Cappadocia. Okay. Mm-hmm. Which there are Christians over there because Paul brought, like, mm-hmm. Christianity up through this area, right? It's in Caesarea, okay? Yeah. So anyway, he spends his time, he hangs out with a Christian family who adopts him, because Christian families do this kind of thing. He comes to love Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he goes, look, my father perpetuated a wrong, and I owe it to my country, and I owe it to that family to go back and be of service to him. So he goes back to Armenia when he's a grown man. The new king, let's just call it King T, the third, is now the king. He's Khosrov's son. And so this guy, Grigor, enlists to be, like, in the service of the king. He does not know, the king doesn't know that this guy's dad is the one who murdered his dad. So anyway, he's doing all kinds of stuff. He's good for the kingdom, except for you're supposed to sacrifice to the gods. And this guy refuses. Grigor mm-hmm. says, look, I'm not going to do it. Through this interaction, it comes out that he figures out that this is the guy. And he's like, screw you and screw Christians. Uh-huh. He's mad because he's like this. He knows what this guy's coming to do. He's like, yes, I get it. You're trying to serve the kingdom, but, like, you're trying to bring Christianity over here. So he's pissed. And so he puts him in a pit for 13 years. It's like kind of like, you remember the story of Jeremiah?
Jeremiah and the
where
sister.
He's like hanging in a pit. Yeah, it's like, kind of like that. He's put in this pit. You can go see this pit, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow.
And so he's kept alive for 13 years by Christian ladies who, like, are showing up, dropping food and crap into the pit.
Yes.
At their own peril. They could have been killed. But it's just the straight up audacity of this man to go, I'm going to go try to set this thing right in service to this king and at my own peril. He's in the pit for 13 years. Khosrov starts persecuting Christians, including some nuns that are in town. He ends up turning into, like, a beastly figure, kind of like the way that you get Nebuchadnezzar. Mm-hmm. The same visuals, like, in his persecution of these, like, virgin nuns because they're Christian, he starts to become, like, physically the thing that's likely the representation of his heart, right? And so when he's at his worst, he's dying, and they go, maybe we should go talk. That guy's God who's in the pit seems to be effective. Like, let's go.
Dude's still alive.
Yeah, he's still alive because the ladies are keeping him alive.
Right.
And he's barely alive. They drag him out of the pit, and he could have fled. He could have, like, I'm getting out of here. Dude put me, tried to kill me, punishing me, and he goes, nah, this is what I came for. And so he goes and talks to this guy. He prays for King T. King T is healed. Armenia becomes the very first nation to have Christianity as its recognized religion, as it's like the religion of the country.
Yeah.
Before it happens in Rome, before it happens anywhere else, it happens in Armenia because of the faithfulness of this dude. And just the straight up audacity of, I think this will work. Christianity spreads like wildfire around this country. The king converts, his family converts, Christianity is a positive influence in the empire. It's not always a positive influence in an empire because people misuse it. Previous conversation. But anyway, it just reminded me, I really like being reminded of just, like, the patience and the audacity to go, I think this will work. Dude, you're in a pit for 13 years. I think this is going well, actually.
Yeah.
Fellas, we're going to put you in prison and beat you for doing just a run-of-the-mill healing. We're like, I think this is working, actually. I think this is going well.
This has been effective for the gospel.
And I think we're going to keep this up. And, like, it's just, it's easy to look at the culture and the things going on around us and go, boy, I don't think this is effective at all. And, like, this does not cross Paul's mind ever. He's like, I think this is working. They just tried to kill you. Yeah, but in Lystra, they tried to kill him. They stoned him. They thought he was dead. They drug him out, and he goes back into the same town. He didn't go, like, hey, we should let it cool down a bit. But when
the people around him tried to get him to.
But Paul's version of not letting it cool down, because you've heard that some of this week, like, hey, the temperature's pretty loud, like, or pretty hot. We should be careful. Paul's version isn't to go in there and stir a bunch of people up in the thing that, like, tries to elevate something of this world. He's like, I'm the bearer of good news. Where else does good news belong except for when the temperature's hot? Mm-hmm. Like, that's where it should happen. The riot that's going on in Ephesus, he's like, let me go. I'm going to go in there. I bet I can calm him down. It's stupid. He's going to cause a riot in there. And, like, and so the town manager calms everybody down. Like, that guy sets it out. There's such a hope in it. There's such a hope to look around and go, I think this is going to do good things. And, like, whatever crap happens going around, you don't get mad and you don't start taking vengeance. You just go, I think this is working. I think it's totally working, as a matter of fact. You just keep on it. Anyway, sorry. That's it. But Ezekiel's in a rough spot. Like, of all this goofball stuff, we're like, why would God have him do the thing? He's got to bust through the wall. He's got to do all this cow dung and stuff. And he's and Ezekiel's, he doesn't want to do it. Like, no. This is rough to go do. But he's like, this is what it looks like to follow Yahweh faithfully. And I'm going to trust it's going to work.
Yeah.
It's going to work. Mm. All right.
Do we even have? We can hold it for next week if we want to. Unless you think you got a quick answer.
I got. I think I have a quick answer.
All right. Okay. So my ask the pastor this week is in Daniel 12. Literally the beginning, in verse 1. At that time shall arise Michael, the great prince who has charge of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never has been since there was a nation till that time. But at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone whose name shall be found written in the book. I honestly, there's a lot to unpack even just in that verse, to be honest with you. But like the very beginning, then at that time shall arise Michael, the prince of your people.
Yep.
So everything I understand up to this point, Michael is an angel of a kind,
mm-hmm.
That is a named angel of a kind. He's not unique in that. He's very a very small list, but not unique in that. There's a concept of this prince word that exists. The Hebrew word is, I think, ser is the word that's used there to mean prince. And in a lot of places, it just means like royalty. But in a couple specific places, it seems to be like these named angels that represent Yahweh's work, I guess, for a nation. And I'm trying to figure out how to take this in. And I'm fine with getting the answer of like, this is prophecy stuff, this apocalyptic stuff. It's not something you need to look at as a literal thing. You shouldn't expect that like there are different offices of angels that exist as these heavenly beings with the wings and the armor and stuff like that. I'm fine with all interpretations, to be honest, or a lot of interpretations, to be honest. I just am trying to figure out how to like even talk about this.
Yeah.
Like how to even take it in at any level to be able to go other than just glancing past it. Because to be honest, that's my first inclination is to go, okay, I trust God. Yeah. Like, I'm fine with that. I don't have any problems with this. This doesn't shake my understanding of spiritual matters. It doesn't shake my understanding of how God exists as a creator and what he can do. It doesn't shake my faith in his power or believability. It just goes, I don't really know about this one, fellas. And I'd like to go deeper than just glance past it.
Yeah. Okay, so the quick answer is that there isn't a lot of places to go deeper in.
Right.
Like, the scripture simply does not give us a ton
like
more information.
Six total.
Yeah, and so there is a place where, like, God has given us as much as we're going to get, and the pursuit beyond that gets into highly speculative.
Fair.
And so that's the general caution, right?
Fair, okay, yeah.
That said, though, and I think this has been something that has been, I've been so cautious, I think, when I was younger, about people misusing this concept of angels that you might have written off as if, like, as if there can't be a reality that scripture is plainly talking to me about.
Yeah.
Right. So like the book of Daniel, and this is somewhat unique to Daniel, but like you get a concept that there are heavenly realm representatives of peoples.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I don't know about individual, although Dan had printed, I think this was in Hebrews at some point, had taught something. It was around like this concept of like a personal guardian angel isn't like crazy far-fetched. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not sure it's what we cartoonishly think it of, but like a connection between a being in the heavenly realms who is like otherwise watching. I don't know if like watching out. I don't know. There's a way to entertain angels unawares. And so like there has to be something about it.
Yeah, sure.
But anyway, Daniel's picture of it is like that there's remember when there's a tussle between, like, he's trying to get a message to, like, that words you said, what did you say?
Sayer.
So like there's different words for prince. David's described as a prince. It's not that same word.
Yes.
Sayer is like I think often used to show like a commander.
Yes, right. It's ruler. Very often military.
Yes, exactly right. And so you get this sense in Daniel of this like angelic representation who like is responsible over or commanding or like looking out for kingdoms of the world. Uh-huh.
Yeah, right.
Right.
And battling so, another representative of another kingdom.
Yes, exactly right. Could that be apocalyptic? Yes, it could be. But I actually don't know what you gain from it.
Right.
I don't think there's a particular insight for it to be symbolic.
Uh-huh.
Outside of the fact that like it matters what goes on Earth. I actually think this is legitimate. I think it's a real thing. I think there is a concept that Scripture is giving us of like there are things that are being fought in a spiritual realm that otherwise have some level of representation or impact on the earthly experience, and that veil is a lot thinner than what we think it is. And so how does that play itself out in everyday stuff? I don't know.
Sure.
And I think which is where my caution comes in, because like once you open yourself up to saying, hey, this could be, then people are looking for it everywhere. And I think that's dangerous.
Yeah,
because I think we miss all kinds of other things. But I actually don't, although I see quite a few things in Scripture as being based upon apocalypse language, I don't know that I think this is it. I think that's a representation of a spiritual one that we just simply don't get a ton of other information for.
Yeah, it's interesting because what threw me to even really think about it was the proper name, like was the Mikhail or whatever, something close to that. Michael.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's only so many places where we have, like, there's plenty of places where capitalizations don't make sense, but this doesn't seem like one of them. It seems like it's a very deliberate use of a name that's not indicative of a place. Like, you get some apocalyptic writing where it's proper noun, name of place, not very often like a spiritual being that has a name like Michael, like Gabriel, where you get that in this book, and then I think two other places, and I was trying to figure that out because I could not find, kind of to your comment of a lot of apocalyptic writing, the symbol has meaning to a culture, and therefore there's things to pull from that. I can't find anything on that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I cannot find any apocalyptic symbolism to the word Michael, to the concept of this prince. He's just nothing. And so I had a feeling that it was kind of one of those, not dead end answers, but truthfully, like, it's not something I need to care that much about.
Yeah.
That's the wrong way to put it. It's not something I need to like spend my life trying to chase down, because the extrapolation will get me into unclear waters that will never have an answer on this side of just speaking straight to God and him giving the answer.
Yeah.
Dan, did you have... I suppose you've probably taught Daniel.
Sure.
Your pastoral years, is there a way to have this conversation that you've had before? Has it ever been a point to talk about?
Yeah, somewhere down the road, I did chapter 12. I mean, angelic part, I think it's just a confirmation that we live in a spiritual world, right?
Yeah.
That it interacts with our world, that they're there, they're involved, and we know what we need to know. You know, it's a need to know basis, and
okay,
most people on the planet have never heard the name of an angel. You know, like God said, hey, here's Michael. You know, I mean,
right?
We know Daniel did.
Yeah,
in the history of the world, right?
Sure.
I mean, yeah. Actually,
met Gabriel, but
it would be easier in some ways to say, oh, this is unique to Daniel and more likely to be apocalypse type stuff if he didn't show up in Jude.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
And
uh-huh.
so
yep.
it's a physical event that we're being talked about, the tussling over Moses' body. And it's affirmed by that name in New Testament literature.
Yeah.
And you're talking hundreds of years between then, which link. I think that makes it, that's the part that makes it far less likely to me to say, oh, it's just a uniqueness to Daniel and it's probably that
right,
kind of apocalypse. I think we're dealing with the real thing.
There's plenty of stuff that might be unique to Daniel that I'm willing to take it in and be like, that's just a Daniel thing.
yeah.
No, that's totally fair. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I had a feeling that was kind of what the answer was going to be, but I just wanted to, I figured it, especially right for an Ask the Pastor, just because a lot of the conversation that I like to have is just kind of framing around where I can run with something and how to even ask the questions in the space.
Yeah.
And that's helpful for me.
I think it's good to be able to establish like the question, it's a totally good question and it's a common question.
Yeah.
Like for people, if you're just dipping your toe into like, is Yahweh a real thing? Like the things that, you know, culture is like, tell me about devil, tell me about angels.
Yes, right.
Like, so like, I get it. And it's actually pretty healthy to know its boundaries. Here's what we know. After that, we have no idea.
Yes.
And I wouldn't even like I don't care about the speculation.
The amount of times I have to get to myself to where I'm like, guys, we can't talk about that. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Flat out doesn't matter. Get past it.
Yeah. Okay. I find the phrase, I don't care about that, to be very effective.
We were talking about that this last week. Yes. Yeah, agreed. I find myself in many circles where people are asking a lot of devil questions. Because like in the circles that I run, the concept of the devil is getting me or the devil's trying to get me to make these decisions is so prevalent. It is insanely prevalent. And it's in almost every conversation I have where people like refuse to take in any place of like temptation means, hey, personal I've sucked before. Yeah. And like I've made really bad choices and my body and mind want to continue to make them.
Yeah.
And so now that I'm trying to get away from them, one of the easiest ways to do that as I start in Christianity is to grab this devil guy and go, whoa, it's all him. It's him. He's getting at me, and I'm not going to let him win because the devil ain't going to win me. And I'm like, all right, let's flip this coin, friends. Right. Okay, all right, thanks. I appreciate it, fellas.
Hey, if you got an Ask the Pastor, hit us up on the Life of the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085, call or text. We'd love to hear from you. All right, Mike, let's give out some advice.
Dear Life from the Path, I want to end a relationship.
Do it.
My husband and I met a couple through mutual friends about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. We are 20 years older than they are and live an hour away.
Yep.
When the mutual friends moved away, we thought that would be the end of it. But this couple pursued a friendship and guilted us into making the long journey to hang with them, stating that we were their only friends. Then we learned that they were having a child in their 40s. They now have 2 children. I have raised my kids, and I'm no longer interested in being around toddlers. Between the distance and the unenjoyable company, I want to end it. I think ghosting them would be tacky, and I want to tell them honestly and gently that we no longer want to visit. My husband disagrees. He thinks we should continue the charade to our immense displeasure. Advice? Oh, yeah, you're a ray of sunshine.
You should do them the incredible service of ghosting them.
Yeah.
Like you, you have put me into a very interesting corner that I would ever say those words. But like legitimately, the nicest thing you can do for that family in your capacity is to ghost them and never speak to them again. And I hope for their sake that they quickly realize the very small space that you left behind that they can then quickly fill with someone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh.
Between the distance and the unenjoyable company, I want to end it.
How often do they get together?
Apparently, too often, and they're guilted every time.
Like, once a year for a weekend? I mean, like,
yeah, that part's really unclear.
It's insane. Like, I feel very just apathetic in this, fellas.
That's
like,
pathetic.
Just flat out. you seem like a real rough person, and I'm sad for your life, and I hope you find better. But in the absence of that, ghost them immediately.
I mean, she didn't offer any kind of like, hey, we're getting on in years, we don't like traveling.
Yeah.
You know, like if they're 40 and they got a couple kids, let's say that was a couple, let's say 3 years ago. So like these people are 20 years older, they're like 63,
they're
60s, 65.
Yeah.
And so like, you're like, we don't see very well at night. We don't like to drive at night. You know, like it's kind of old people stuff. I'd be like, okay.
It's a different story.
You know, but you're just like, I got to be honest with you. We never liked you, and your kids are gross to us. And frankly, I find your company to be, it makes me want to take an acid.
I hope you don't have grandkids.
Right, exactly. Right? That's what I was just thinking is like, I'm no longer interested in being around toddlers.
Yeah.
What is your life like that you look at a toddler and just, ugh. Like, I can understand some toddlers are obnoxious. There's no denying that.
Energy.
Like, there's some kids that I'm just like, I have grace for that.
Yeah.
But, like, just to flat out be like, I don't want to be around toddlers anymore. Yeah. I have no patience for this, and I'm past this in my life.
Dude, they're the best when they're not yours.
Yeah, right? That's what I was just thinking. They're
so much
bundles
fun.
Of joy that you get to hand back to parents as messy as you want to. Like, they can have run in mud and spaghetti sauce. And it doesn't freaking matter.
Let me ask you this question. If you're the couple.
Which one?
If you're the young couple.
Yep.
I'm trying to think what is best service to them.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you rather know, have them tell you so that you can go, so that like they have the ability to go, those old people are wacky.
Yeah, totally.
Like, otherwise, if they just ghost you, you're like, what did we do? But now you know for a fact that's because they're quirky. Like, wouldn't you rather know?
Oh, yeah. It would be best for this couple to, like, show their true colors.
Okay, yeah, totally.
Undoubtedly true.
So our advice is you should go tell them. directly. Yeah. Just so you can out yourself as a geriatric turd.
Sure. Yes. Fair.
What if your husband, it seems like the husband's pretty cool. He's like, we should still hang out with these people.
I think she said he's willing to do this even to our mutual dissatisfaction or something along those lines.
I think she's speaking for both of them.
Yeah, that's possible.
I think he digs on this
situation and he's being a good dude. Good on him.
Oh, what do you do if you're that guy? Your wife insists upon it. She's like, we're going to tell him. We're going to tell him together. You do not agree with the thing this woman's going to say.
Here's the deal. You should have made a better decision 50 years ago.
But this is the position he's in now. What does he do?
Yeah. They go to church and they find good Jesus people.
They do that already.
That's not true.
Yes.
That's not true.
She just has a low tolerance. She doesn't work the nursery.
I mean, here's the thing.
Then
is like
the church needs to speak to her as a whole body.
Hold on a minute. Now, listen. You can love everybody and not like have everybody as your friend.
Right.
That's unreasonable. What if you just don't get along with them?
What part of that was a disagreement with what we've been saying?
Because you're like, they need to go to church and fix this. They just don't like them.
Oh, this is much further than just they don't like him, Mike.
That doesn't want to sound like. They just don't want to hang out with
him. I think you're taking it in wrong, then. These are, like, angry, curmudgeon-y people.
I think
that, like,
one,
don't want to be around toddlers.
One angry, curmudgeon-y. This is one person speaking for a married couple, and the husband's like, I don't think we should bail on this at all.
That's the thing you're supposing. I suppose the opposite. Neither of us have the ability to argue with an actual point of authority.
So you feel like the husband's in on this.
Yes, I feel like the husband's a schmuck.
And he wants to keep up the charade for what reason?
Because it's more convenient to not have to actually deal with this. And it's too much effort. It's too much effort
isn't
to even try and break
to,
for this.
Isn't it more effort to have to like have dinner with him?
Not to this fella. It's every 6 months to a year.
This is a unique guy that you're painting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Arguably same for you.
No, I don't think so. No.
This is a super fun argument, fellas, that seems to have a possible conclusion.
I mean, as the story has been presented itself, basically she just said, all she said about the husband was, he disagrees. That's it. That's all you know about the man.
He disagrees with her.
Yeah.
But they both are mutually dissatisfied.
She didn't say that.
What?
No, yeah, you're right. It just said that the woman doesn't like their company, and the man does. It sounds like it's fine.
Yeah.
He's all right with it.
Yeah. I feel like there's a part that I would need to reread then, because I don't think that's true.
All right, so your advice to the people is just cut it. Be honest. Say, look, we're not coming. We're done.
Yes.
I think that is the best service to the young couple.
All right, Segular says, I disagree with your husband. The problem with playing charades is not that all the player is that not all the players are able to decode the pantomime. Save yourself a world of frustration in addition to the money you are spending on fuel, and tell the couple that it's time for them to make friends with other parents of young children in their community. Explain that you have raised a family and the trip is onerous for you, which is why you are calling a halt to it. So lie. If you are their only friends, as they have stated, it is important that they cultivate relationships with other parents, if only so their children can form relationships with other children.
Yeah, that's a real cookie cutter way to handle it.
Yeah, right.
Yep. Huh. Yeah, I think it's bad advice. I'm more. I think you should be like you should be honest. Because it's Mike, to your point, like it's fine if they don't want to hang out with them. Like it's okay
yes.
if they don't like people, and it's even okay if that's the reason. Like if she just doesn't like being around kids, some people just don't. I mean, I'm not sure it's terribly curmudgeon-y. I think it's a little bit of blaming. She just doesn't want to admit that, like, just say the harsh thing, which is, we just don't like you, as I said a couple
times. There's a difference between, like, babysitting a toddler where you're, like, in care of this kid and you haven't been in the parenting realm for a while and, like, all your outlets exposed and you got all your porcelain stuff right. everywhere. You know what I'm saying? The place has got a bunch of
China.
Jagged edges and crap. Your dog occasionally bites people. And now you're like, great, now this toddler's out here pulling his ears and stuff. Like, that's reasonable, right?
Uh-huh,
but, like,
right.
if you're going to their house with their toys and
right.
their rules, you just get to, like, draw mustaches on them and with permanent marker and cut a trail. Like, I don't understand you.
Yeah.
We're just from different worlds, I guess.
I'm still more, like, we can let it go, but I'm still more interested in this husband. I just think he's in a rough spot.
Hmm. Yeah, we're letting it
okay.
go.
Yeah.
All right, last one. Dear Live from the Path, I'm a member of AA. A fellow AA member suffered critical injuries in a motorcycle accident recently and had been in the ICU for several weeks. I visited the hospital regularly, bringing cookies and offering support to his girlfriend, who is also in the program. During my last visit, I unknowingly arrived at the exact moment doctors began to withdraw life support. I had no idea it was going to happen and witnessed the kind of raw grief that comes in moments like that. Afterward, I hugged his girlfriend and quietly left. Only later did I learn that many in our AA group knew he was being taken off life support that day. I am now devastated. I worry that his girlfriend and family think I showed up intentionally, intruding on such a deeply private, painful moment. I'm afraid I caused harm where I only meant to help. I don't know when I'll see her again to make amends. How do I come to terms with what I've done?
Dude, stop making it about you.
Yeah.
They're not thinking about you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I wouldn't even go as far as to say, like, explain it to her when you see her next.
Yeah.
Hopefully, like, you don't have to talk it through it. Just, yeah.
Yeah. If she's like, what were you doing there?
Right. Yeah. If she asks the question, you can speak to yourself.
Come on
right.
purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I cared, but I really didn't. I wish I did come on purpose. I mean,
weird situation.
I don't know, man. Like, that had to feel weird. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, undoubtedly.
Super, yeah. like, intense, close, like, yeah. moment of, like, your really inner circle. And then here's some kind of wild man from your AA days bringing cookies. And you're like, hey, man.
Now, in his defense, I mean, I'm probably a little callous to this because I've been in that situation many, many, yeah. many times. Most people haven't. So sure. it is an intimidating and scary and wild.
Yeah, trying to navigate the concept shocking. Of your own emotions and grief,
yeah,
and trying
yeah.
to in any way decipher other people's emotions yeah. and grief is a hard.
So we'll
game.
Give him grace here.
Yeah, totally.
But don't worry about it. That'd be
yeah.
the
yeah yeah. You're probably not being thought of. It was very nice that you were trying to be help like nice in the couple weeks.
Yeah, yeah. I chalk it up as a non-event and not bring it up unless yeah. they bring it up.
Yeah.
yeah,
I think it's fair.
All right, Secular says, you must not blame yourself for something you didn't know. That's the horrible life advice. that doesn't play into most things, but anyway. During the weeks you visited that man and his girlfriend at the hospital, I am sure you brought comfort to the girlfriend and any family member you encountered. The next time you see her, tell her how sorry you are for her loss, that you didn't realize how close her boyfriend was to the end, and apologize if your presence caused any pain. I'm sure it did not. Yeah, I don't know. That's I'd not mention any of that.
Yeah, it's just going to create an awkward moment.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a chance she's going to have to go, yeah, no, we didn't think about you at all.
Yeah, right. She might even realize you were there.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot you were there. And then now you're doubly horrible.
And then she'll feel
reason.
Bad because she's like, I didn't acknowledge your presence there and right. you were there at a hard time.
And now there's some burden on her and yeah. attacks on your emotions for her.
Yeah, I'd stay out of all that mess.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, you've been listening to Live from the Path on, we don't say that anymore. It's on the podcast and on the YouTubes and all the things. Hit us up on the complaint line at
515-517-0085.
That's 515-517-0085. Call or text. And thank you for joining us on Live from the Path tonight. Remember, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You are Live from the
Path. No,
you are not, you Live from the
Path. You are.
Not, you've been listening to Live from
you
the Path.
You are Live from the Path.
All right.
We are.
All right.
Live from
Michael has his own office.
Listen to me.
They call him on the God phone.
I can't.
He's got an earpiece.
Except it rings. It
like
rings.
The bodyguard.
It does. It's not a regular ring. It's like Yahweh. Yahweh.
I can't leave.
I don't know if
it's like the voice of many waters.
I apologize for getting distracted. It would be difficult if Yahweh only speaks in many waters, and so every time it comes over the line, it's just like whoosh.
Yeah, but I think Michael might have a translator at that point in time. He's
yeah,
like, I've been hearing this.
If I was Ezekiel, I'd be like, did he say cook stuff over dung?
Does it have to be cow's dung?
All right. Hey, you and listen to Live from the Path. Yeah, thanks for hanging out with us. 515-517-0085. Call or text. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, be faithful in means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.
Nailed it.
Did not nail it.